Hi, and welcome to the radio version of DC Public Safety. I'm your host, Len Sipes. At our microphones today is Kimberly Wade. She's a community supervision officer. Willa Butler, who is a supervisory community supervision officer, and an offender that we have currently under supervision, and we're simply going to call her Jane. The focus of the program is on women offenders. We have a conference coming up to deal with women offenders during our annual 30 days of re-entry reflection, where we talk about people coming out of prison, what needs to be done to help them, and the issues of people coming out of prison. And to Kimberly and to Willa and to Jane, welcome to the radio version of DC Public Safety.
Glad to be here.
Okay. We're going to go off with you, Jane, first. Can you give me a little bit of a sense of as to who you are, what you did to bring yourself into the criminal justice system?
I am a 46-year-old single mother, three children, five grandchildren, just a mishap talking and getting in the criminal justice system. Serve in pretrial for about 7 or 8 months. Didn't like what I seen, so I asked for my present judge, was the regular judge, what you call her? What do you call it? My regular judge. So that sent me to see Sosa. My regular trial judge.
Now, have you served prison time?
In pretrial, like for sanctions, like I think three different times, 4 days each period.
Okay, so you went to a period of incarceration because you didn't do the stuff you had to do in pretrial?
Exactly. Okay. Which mean no positive, no drug use
right.
at all.
Do you have a drug history?
No.
Okay.
Just
what were your crimes?
It was possession of cocaine, they said. But my initially crime was just drinking with an open container. But something went wrong on the scene, and I was involved or was thrust into this possession charge.
Okay.
It's nothing I could do about it at the time.
Your background is solely, the only reason that you're involved in the criminal justice system was for possession of cocaine?
No, just for, drinking with an open container.
Okay.
Well, all of it confused me in the beginning because it was my first time ever being in trouble. I didn't understand what was happening to me or with me.
Right.
So by the time it was 2 months later, before I came to court, by that time I was a full blown drug user.
Okay.
And the court seen that, and when I learned of the charges, I just was distraught. So
how long have you been doing drugs?
Since I was arrested.
Okay.
2004, like November, because my Christmas was coming up, all the holidays. Right. I had that charge, and I figured that's, you know.
Are you on parole or probation now?
Probation.
Okay. So how long have you been on probation?
For 11 months. Okay. I had a year of probation. The judge ordered me a year in probation, year in residential treatment.
Okay. Did you go to residential drug treatment?
Yes.
And how did that work for you?
That worked okay. Not in the beginning because I didn't want to be gone that long away from my family.
Right.
I had 3 months, and by the end of that first month, I was becoming more open and willing.
Okay. Which is typical for a lot of folks going into drug treatment. Okay.
After the 3 months, before the 3 months was over, I decided that I didn't want to go back into my neighborhood because that's where everything started. And
right.
I just didn't, you know, I don't think I was ready the way I took off on the drugs and alcohol.
All right.
So
that was your first contact with the criminal justice
system? Yes, my first contact.
And what age was that?
42.
Wow. And what did you do?
44.
What did you do up to that age?
I was a single parent homemaker.
Okay.
Child care provider.
Okay.
A mother, a daughter, all right. A sister, a law-abiding citizen.
So you got involved in the criminal justice system late in your life?
Mm-hmm.
That's unusual.
Yeah, it is. And unfortunate.
Why do you think you made that transformation?
It wasn't to my it wasn't to my I didn't decide to make it. It just happened.
It just happened. Yeah. Why? I mean, it just didn't happen out of nowhere. It didn't happen out of the blue. I mean, somewhere along the line, you went from, you know, day to day citizen to drug user,
mm-hmm.
and you ended up in the criminal justice system. I'm just curious as to.
I just believe all it up until them 44 years, I was just overwhelmed with things that I had been doing in my life. Far as all the good, and for that to happen to me, I just didn't have no understanding or couldn't really comprehend it at the time. And I figured then, you know, what the hell, you know, I mean, being good is, if this was gonna happen to you, living a productive life, then I didn't want to, you know, I just didn't want to be good anymore. So
what happened to you? Again, you and I don't know each other. We haven't met before today. So if I'm delving into things that are too uncomfortable for you, then that's fine.
In the drug neighborhood, I was coming from the ice cream truck. I stopped. Someone stopped to ask me for a cigarette. I stopped to talk to him. I had a cup of beer. We stopped. We was just standing there talking. About 5 minutes later, the police ran up on one of the guys that I was talking with,
mm-hmm.
and just ran up on him, and they got to fighting. So he told everybody to move, but I just wanted to stand there and be nosy.
Mm-hmm.
And when they was fighting, the police officer and the guy was fighting, I just stood there and watched. So when everything was over, I'm still standing there. So one of the police officers came and asked me, did I have anything in my pocket? I told him no.
Mm-hmm.
He say, is it any, if I find anything, you know, if I find anything, you know what's going to happen. And I say, sure, I do. I made a little comment about living in the area where I lived at, and I'm not stupid.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think he liked the comment that I made.
Okay.
So He went, him and another officer took turns. They went in my pockets. They didn't find anything. So they got, he arrested the guy that he was fighting, put
right.
him in the car.
Right.
I'm still standing there, scared to death, but I'm still standing there. Y'all got to excuse me because I'm a little nervous.
Nothing to be nervous.
And let me see. Okay, I'm
so they
still
took away the guy who was fighting
him.
The police officer.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened to you?
And I was just standing there just to prove that, I mean, I didn't have anything. So
right.
why should I, leave? I just was wanting to, because it was a lot of abusive things going on with the police in that particular area.
Okay.
And I was not an activist, but I had moved in the community, and I was concerned, and I wanted to know everything about where I was living at.
Right. So what happened to you?
And so he called about, he had me standing there, and he called a lady, police officer,
mm-hmm.
and she came. A lot of other officers came. They he asked her to check me. She didn't find anything on me, so they asked him, what was he arresting me for? And he said, I had some drugs on me, mm-hmm. Some cocaine.
Mm-hmm.
And I said he didn't get no cocaine off of me. And that was that. So they put me in the car and just took me off to the precinct.
And you're saying that is what started you in drugs?
Yes, that's what actually started the whole thing.
So you sort of figured you'd lived a good life, you haven't committed any crimes, mm-hmm. but you got arrested anyway, and
yeah,
and that sort of set you off in a downward spiral.
Exactly, I guess, because not being able to handle or deal with what had just happened to me. So by the time I got out, like 2:00 that morning, my daughter's father came to pick me up. He paid the $10 for the citation charge. I waited to get my jewelry. My jewelry was not there. I couldn't get my jewelry that night. So by me sitting in a cold, hard cell for 6 hours, I left. Mm-hmm. When we left, we went to this place. Everybody was where I went with him. Everybody smoking, drinking, snorting, doing what they do. Mm-hmm. Take this, you know, the old thing. Take this and make you feel better, because I was just overwhelmed with the pain that I was feeling at the time. Mm-hmm. So that's what started me. Mm. And I liked it there, and I just went off to the races, and that's my story.
All right. So many people get caught up in drugs for a variety of different reasons. Is there anything that we can do, a larger society or the agency that I work for, the Court Services and Offender Supervision Agency, is there anything that we can do to help people caught up on drugs?
I believe, since with my experience, what I wanted done for me is just to see what I really needed and what I was asking for, what crying out for was, I wanted to move out of my community.
Okay.
And just the little support that a family might need, far as helping with the kids. I never had my children taken away from me till mm-hmm. I was in treatment. My daughter's father had abused her. Mm-hmm. And she was put in the system. Well, my sister kept her. She wasn't foster kid placed or anything. But I have her back now just to help, you know, little things that they might need. Because I see a lot of parent females out there that's on it. They don't have any consideration for their families, their children. Just to give them the support. Unless a lot of them is uneducated. Mm-hmm. They don't have like over sixth grade education.
Right.
They need to like be accessed in a way that they will not be receiving a government assistance.
All right, but they need drug treatment. You think
exactly. That. It need to be more drug treatment. And
if they don't get the drug treatment, what happens?
If they just spiral down, they just go down deep into the black hole.
You received residential drug treatment. Did you receive that through us, the Court Services and Offender Supervision
yes,
Agency?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So did you go through the Reentry and Sanction Center, by the way?
I don't know what that is.
No, okay. What else did we do? And what do you think for what else should we be doing regarding women offenders?
Just, I think every individual case is different. Like mine, I can't speak for nobody else, mm-hmm. but you got a lot of female women out there that do deserve what they get. I mean, you do what you do, you get what you get. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them is just dead set on the life that they live. So that kind of make it bad for people like me.
All right. So what you're suggesting is some don't want to change.
Some don't want to change.
Some need to be ready for the change.
They have to. It's not for people who need this. This for people who want it.
All right. Kimberly Wade, you've been a community supervision officer for the Court Services and Offender Supervision Agency for how long?
For 4 years.
Okay. How do you like it?
It has its ups and downs.
Yeah. I mean, it's a tough job.
Yes.
I've done this. I've worked directly with offender populations, and it was one of the hardest jobs I've ever had in my life. I've done jail or job corps kids. I've done gang counseling on the streets of the city of Baltimore, and I ran a group in a prison system. Hard, hard, tough job, simply because we throw our hearts and soul into this sort of effort, and quite frankly, we're not rewarded all the time.
Exactly.
And that becomes a tough, you know, it's hard to see a human being throw their lives away when they have the opportunities to change their lives.
Yeah. And that's a lot of them.
Right. But one of the themes of this program and the other programs that I've been doing, talking about reentry month or 30 days of reentry reflection every January that we hold, we, the Court Services and Offender Supervision Agency, have a series of events, and one of them, a conference on women offenders. It's still my my supposition, it's still my proposal, that if the programs were there, a lot of women who are virtually all taking care of kids, by the way, as you well know, would become taxpayers, would no longer be tax burdens, would no longer be out there doing the things that they're doing to hurt themselves and society and their kids. But the programs are important.
Yes, there are. But overall, I think they have to be willing to change and have a desire to change. If they don't, then all the programs will not help.
Sure.
But, you know, like Jane here, she wanted to change, and she grasped the programs head on. She had some apprehensions in the beginning, but once she got there and understood her reason for being there and established some goals, she was able to go with it head on and succeed in residential treatment, followed by transitional housing and into another housing program where she'll now gain her own housing after she completes the program that she's in.
What do you mean by your own housing?
She's in a program. A transitional program now with her daughter. She does have custody of her daughter again, which is she didn't have before.
Right.
So she's gained custody of her daughter.
Right.
They're in a mother-daughter program where once they complete the mother-daughter program and the transitional housing, then they will find them housing of their own where
That's
her
great.
And her daughter will
so
reside together.
So an apartment
together.
Is what we're talking about?
Yes.
Okay, good. Now, how many Janes are out there? That really want to get involved in programs, who really want to change their lives. I mean, it's so many people throughout my career of interviewing offenders and people who work with offenders. What I hear is that they're sick and tired of being sick and tired, and that's generally speaking, they're strung out from drugs for so long that they simply desperately need a change of lifestyle. But we all agree that unless they want that change of lifestyle, there may be some question as to how good what good the programs are going to do. But there's a significant number of women offenders out there who desperately want to change. That's my reaction. Am I right or wrong?
I think there is, and I think on the other hand, the women that do not want to change. Sometimes if you place them in a program and they see that there is a better way, it can kind of coerce them into, making that change and wanting to be when they see a better way. And they see them, some of them haven't even seen themselves off of drugs in such a long time that they don't know what it's like. So when they see that there is a different way to live, there is a way to live off of drugs, there is a way to, to proceed in life as a productive citizen, then that will encourage them to change. Also, a lot of people go into treatment and things with apprehensions and they're able to change. Some people go in knowing that they want to change. And that's what they're going to do. Others, it's just not the time for them.
I understand that. The so many offenders, women offenders in particular, come with histories of substance abuse. They're according to the research, their rates of substance abuse is greater than that of male offenders. With offenders who have mental health issues, it's generally speaking more women have mental health issues than the male offenders. Women offenders have kids. Women offenders have, in some cases, in many cases, real dysfunctional relationships with their male significant other. It's different for women offenders than male offenders. In
yes,
many cases.
It is.
And tell me a little bit more about that.
Yeah, and in some cases we have to make special accommodations for women offenders. I've had women offenders who've been placed with their kids in a residential program where the mother is having treatment and the child is able to go to school and live a normal, productive life, and the mother's able to take their child to treatment with them. And so we try to make special accommodations for women. We have parenting classes that we offer them. They can go to counseling, refer them for counseling for different mental health issues that they have. So we try to address all of the issues that they have because they do have so many more than men.
Okay. And can they be successfully addressed? And that's part of the issue throughout all these programs that we're doing surrounding Reentry Month or the 30 days of reentry reflection is whether or not these programs indeed are going to be successful. And I think we've answered that. If the woman offender really wants that help, really reaches out, then we have the programs that will help her.
But I think Jane is a prime example of that.
Okay.
She has come a long way. She's been clean for several months now. She has custody of her child again.
And she's clean because we drug test her.
Yes.
You just don't take Jane's word for it.
No, not at all.
Okay. Go ahead, Jane.
Oh, but I was being drug tested before, and that didn't matter me knowing I was coming down
here. Why does it matter now?
Because this is what I want. I feel that I'm not getting. I have my life back. And
what I'm still trying to get at that magic moment in terms of you getting your life back. What do you think prompted it?
Miss Willa. Miss Willa.
Willa Butler.
Yeah, and
you're not the first person under supervision who's told me that Willa has been a meaningful person in their lives.
No. When I seen how concerned they was about me and I had very serious health problems, then I knew in my heart that I couldn't not only let my children and myself down, but let these people down that was putting their necks out for me, that was calling me into their offices and telling me that I better do this or this gonna happen.
Right. Why didn't drug testing work for you before?
Because I wasn't ready. I was just beginning to start out on it, and I liked it so much. And I was determined that these people that was coming in my life wasn't going to tell me what to do and how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I just kept on testing positive until I got tired and said, I'm just tired of being sick and tired. But getting this extra assistance during treatment and then after your treatment is over,
mm-hmm.
you know, you got special people being put in your life. And not only, you know, to help you. Some of them are put in your life to help you, but they don't. You know, then getting my stronger connections with my higher power helped me. He revealed a lot of things to me.
I've heard that from so many successful offenders.
Yeah.
Willa Butler, we're going to go over to you now. How many years, Willa, have you been doing this?
I started supervising women in 1999 when I was placed under the St. Hyda unit under Court Services and Offender Supervision Agency. And the program was a gender specific program designed for female offenders, which focused on their vulnerabilities. It was a holistic approach, meaning spiritual centered. And it's been going on ever since. I became a supervisor in February 2006, and now it's been run by another CSO in St. Hyda.
Now, so many women offenders have sung your praises. What's your connection? What is it that you do that connects with so many women offenders?
Well, like I said, the spiritual center and God is love. And that's basically what I do. I give them love, I give them compassion, and I let them know that we care about them. And I listen to them, and not only do I listen to them, but I enforce also what they need to do to make their lives productive. And it's just not a companion or a mentor.
You hold them accountable for their
actions. I really do. I hold them accountable, and I let them see their mistakes. In other words, I give them the two sides of the coin. Either you want to live a productive life or you want to go back to prison. And the bottom line is they do want to live a productive life. Sometimes they just don't know how.
In terms of, again, the same questions that I asked Kimberly, the programs that are out there and the programs that should be out there, is there a difference? Women offenders are different from male offenders. They have special needs, especially in terms of substance abuse, mental health. An awful lot of offenders, women offenders, have come from histories of sexual violence. Either as children or in their teenage years. An awful lot of those acts of violence, sexual violence, has been directed at them towards people who know them, in some cases family members. You know, there are needs of female offenders, is my point. And are we the larger society, and is the Court Services and Offender Supervision Agency taking care of those unique needs?
The needs are being taken care of. It's more in a quantitative matter. We need more programs. We have programs, but we need more. We might have one or two treatment facilities that takes women with their children. We need like maybe 10.
Right.
You know, and we need housing that's going to be more suitable for women and their children. The society is just not geared for the female offender or the female in general. And that's something that we're working towards. We talked about the women's forum that we're going to have on the 27th of this month. And some of those issues will be addressed.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the purpose of the forum. This is our third year going into this forum. And we've seen things come out of it. It has been productive.
Like what? What's come out of it?
For example, just getting us out there, letting people know that women need these type of resources, and more people are more involved into helping us now, and they want to get involved as far as volunteering their services or their vendors or whatever that they can do to make the women's lives more productive while they're coming out of the institution and on supervision.
Well, Butler, you have the final word, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for listening to DC Public Safety. I'm your host, Len Sipes. At the microphones today has been Willa Butler, Supervisory Community Supervision Officer, Kimberly Wade, a Community Supervision Officer, and the lady who we simply will call Jane. Thank you all three for being involved in the program. If you want additional information about what it is that we do here at the Court Services and Offender Supervision Agency, look at our website at www.csosa.gov. Again, it's www.csosa.gov. Thanks and have a great day.